Welcome, one and all, from across all points of time to your Loki podcast by Fantastic Geek, the official unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me from the past is dirt bike riding Pete. Hello, Pete.
Do you live around here, or did you follow me home? The Loki podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 205, Science / Fiction, is brought to you by Piranha Power Sports Personal Watercraft. Financing available for the Thinking Man's dirt bike.
On the topic of science fiction, Pete, on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, tomorrow we'll be talking Star Trek Lower Decks, its season 4 finale, of course, on Star Trek Sunday. It's just the sci-fi everywhere.
With a fifth season assured. We'll be digesting all of that. Ongoing, Matt, are the SAG-AFTRA talks, with studios talking up their offer that, you know, everybody should just jump at.
And Pete, more news that this weekend the executives may not just attend via Zoom, but may attend in person on the weekend. On the one hand, there seems to be momentum building, but literally all week there was the undercurrent of deal in 48 hours, next day, deal in 48 hours, the next day. In 48 hours, there could be a deal. So who knows at this point? It does seem when they talk more and talk on consecutive days or spend days analyzing the offers that this is all in a positive direction. That said, there is the feeling all the way back from the spring and the Directors Guild contract that they agreed to things in principle and didn't read the fine print. And now, you know, there's the potential of being bit by those particulars. So slow and steady wins the race, I think, is the theme of the day and indeed the theme of the whole negotiating mindset here.
Meanwhile, a bombshell article run by Variety this week. Matt, the headline, the cover, is Marvel in Trouble.
It truly was astonishing to read. Astonishing. I think some of the general points made there were things that we were aware of, i.e. VFX issues in Quantumania. But things like the Quantumania world premiere had broken special effects, and it happened
to the point where the children of executives were discussing them. That to me was my favorite detail.
That was the most pinky up, but also, like, I think within the world of Hollywood,
of executive babes.
Yeah. Pete, definitely warranting a discussion. I don't know that here is the time nor the place as we get ready for an episode that's somehow weirdly without time nor place, but that article is worth a read and definitely worth us digging into at a later point.
Yes, we are going to be bringing you a special State of the Marvel Union podcast to Patreon, so look for that in the near future.
Also in the near future, Pete, we're getting ready for the Marvels. Despite the fact that there's the lower tracking and the lower potential box office as it comes out this upcoming weekend. Nonetheless, Pete, there we will be yet again. And of course, we have on the Marvel Movie podcast feed our review of Captain Marvel. Talked about Monica Rambeau on the WandaVision podcast. Ditto for Kamala Khan on the Ms. Marvel podcast. So just, you know, exciting opportunities to review those journeys.
And we will be podcasting The Marvels on The Marvels Monday, November 13th. So make sure you are planning ahead to get us that feedback.
And also, Pete, in the last week, as you have been saying, and I must confess, I don't remember how much you've been saying it on.
I was right twice in the last 48 hours.
Indeed. Echo arriving on January 10th. That's going to be all the episodes. I still have yet to see a final episode count. I don't know if you have seen one, Pete. I thought that was a bit conspicuous in its absence, but the very, very, very good trailer out And again, this notion that it's all at once. Add to it that it is firmly TVMA, and I think, among other things, Disney Plus using this as an opportunity to get adult users to okay the TVMA option on their profiles, and so forth.
Also available on Hulu, something we've not seen to this point as well.
Yeah, Hulu for a limited time, only until April, which is, on the one hand, is interesting. Pete, not on our on our list here, so I will just say it in one sentence. Disney is being forced to buy the remaining one-third of Hulu that Comcast owns as part of merger deals from when the Fox deal was done. So Hulu is going to be a tile on Disney Plus in 2024 at some point. So it's slightly moot. It's probably going to be its own pay thing to add to it. But just, folks, be prepared for that, that Hulu as a standalone is going to go away. And if you want to do your Hulu, it's going to have to be through Disney Plus. I don't know if you could do just Hulu without Disney Plus, but it's going to be its own tile, so get ready for that.
I can't wait to watch the final season of The Handmaid's Tale on Disney Plus when June Osborne officially becomes a Disney princess.
But Pete, bringing things back to Echo, this all-in-one release for it does raise the question in terms of how best we should podcast the show. And we're going to be inviting all listener input. If you go to our Patreon right now, whether you're a patron or not, you could vote in a poll there. You know, obviously the one thought is to do one a day for successive days or to lump the episodes together. There certainly is a variety of options in how it could be done. Obviously the most the farthest spread out would be one per week. But we would certainly welcome all listeners to share their thoughts there on Patreon.
We want your input of how you're going to intake the show, of how you want to discuss it and have that water cooler conversation. So please make sure you make your voice heard there.
And Pete, turning the corner back to Loki now, there was some data in the last week that's the season two viewership numbers are down relative to season one. I guess I don't know what to make of that one way or another, other than to say, I think all of these properties are somewhat hampered. You know, if you have a mindset of let's get the next season out in X amount of time, I'm even thinking of the Marvels here, the fact that there's been COVID delays and production delays and VFX delays and, you know, all these things, when it gets spread out, it loses momentum a little bit. I don't think that has taken away from you, nor I, nor our listeners enjoying this season.
It doesn't. And newsflash, Matt, 99% of the time, second seasons have lower viewership than first seasons, right? It's the law of diminishing returns as you go on.
An excellent point there, Pete.
Let's look into the glorious purpose of this episode. As Loki breathes heavily, he opens his eyes, bathed in bright light, a tear rolling down his cheek, to come to the realization he's still alive, but now alone. He walks through the TVA, entering the automat. An automated female voice announces TVA code 1229. Failsafe mode initiated. And then Loki starts to time slip again, much to his chagrin. He slips from just outside holding to the TVA bullpen, where he sees himself in front of the monitor, but when he looks back, he's gone.
It should be noted too, Pete, in this scene, that one of the Lokis, whether it's present past or past present Loki, of course they all kind of diverge at a certain point, but that Loki is going to leave this scene with a TVA handbook. Some hard editing cuts here to really hammer home the shock of what's going on. Loki ultimately hearing a buzzing and seeing the consoles beginning to spaghettify. The spaghettification now happening everywhere around him, tendrils seemingly pulling toward him. Then he is gone too. We see the monitor get taken, and roll into a title card where the letters start to pop out. A moroseness to this opening here. Before Pete, look, many, the longest term listeners, some of the longest term listeners found us for the now defunct Alcatraz podcast. And from the moment there was the papier-mâché head in a jail cell, I knew in my soul that we were in Alcatraz. Of course, we see under the jail bed, it is Casey. Very quickly, if you know the story of the three guys who escaped but whose bodies were never found, presumed washed out to sea, some of the iconography here of the hole in the wall, joined by two other men. Quickly, it's coming together as Pete, the Alcatraz episode we never quite got.
Yes, but this one taking place in San Francisco, 1962, on a branched timeline where Casey is known as Frank. On the beach, Loki grunts loudly. They stop to look and don't see anything before continuing. And then Loki runs to the person he identifies as Casey, who does not recognize him. And he's not a boat guy, knowing nothing about it. How did he get to Alcatraz then, before Matt, in 1963, in March 21st, 1963, to be exact? All of the prisoners were moved from the island after the prison was closed, except that's not what happened. Not at all.
Pete, I will just remind you that this is a branch timeline, and perhaps somewhere out there in the great, glorious, I don't know, Marvel multiverse, but in the multiverse on top of multiverses, there still is more Alcatraz TV show to answer some of those questions. Next stop, Pete, just when you thought that maybe your nostalgia journey was over, we are back at the, shall we say, the Sylvie McDonald's.
Yes, but before we can resolve whether or not you've had your break today, Matt, we're back at Piranha Power Sports Personal Watercraft, and then into Time Theater 25 at the TVA,
which looks just the tiniest bit blue screened or something like that. It did make me wonder. Obviously, the production moved from Atlanta to the UK between season one and season two. They used so little of this set, I had wondered if maybe it was somewhat by digital means here. But Pete, the story on the move again, as we go to 2012 in a branch timeline in New York, where who I would like to call Dr. B-15, because I think she's only properly given a last name, I believe, in subtitles, and that's later on in the episode.
But she disappears, yes. I have her as Dr. B-15 throughout my notes.
So she's healing up a girl, finishing the casting process. Reminder, don't climb trees if you can avoid it. Certainly, look, B-15 not getting the most scenes in this episode, but I think the thrust of this scene here to show the opposite of the kind of capable military police B-15, it's kind of the kindly, joking, somewhat stern, you know, don't fall again, don't want to break an arm again, doctor, but certainly somebody who has a different personality from the B-15 that we have known so far.
Well, what's interesting about the way she's introduced, and you can look at it as, oh, we're going to show doctor doing doctor things. But in terms of the dialogue, hey, do you remember how much it hurt? Okay, I'm going to write you a reminder on your cast about how much it hurts. But she's saying it out loud, and she says out loud, trailing off the beginning, she says, climb trees, and then writes, don't climb trees. And also noting to mom, it's not going to stop her. And the girl she's telling this advice to, shaking her head, it's not going to stop me. Okay? This is all statement of theme for the rest of the episode.
And, you know, I hope that we get more of B-15. I was going to say in what's left. Of course, it is just one episode. I feel like this episode is in a slightly interesting conundrum in that we care about all these characters and we're slowing down in this episode to give them all their moments and their alternate lives, the places from which they were pulled and so forth. Are we ever going to return to these lives? To, you know, like how disposable, dispensable is this episode? I was just aware of that as watching it. You know, if there was Loki season two, the movie, this 49-minute episode probably would have been a slick 18 minutes, and we would have kind of zip-zap-zooped a lot faster. And don't get me wrong, I like the pace of this. It's just, particularly in light of that Variety article and in light of some of the conversations we've been having lately of the state of Marvel and movies versus TV shows and all of that, this is, on the one hand, a very welcome episode, but also in the shadow of last week's, the end of last week's episode and next week's season, nay, series, nay, MCU-breaking finale. So we're watching it in a weird place. That's my conclusion.
But Dr. B-15 did try here, Matt. Out in the hallway, she sees Loki time slip in, turn around, and slip away again, which shocks and horrifies her. The wind in his hair and a vest on his body, Mobius grips a jet ski, but Don, as he's actually known, is on a Sea-Doo in front of a fan as he's snapped back to reality by a call from his son on line 3. He tells Dale to tell his son he'll call him back because daddy's trying to close a sale in Cleveland, 2022, on a branched timeline, but his prospective buyer was more interested in a dirt bike. He can call him if he changes his mind or wants another donut. Loki slips in, imitating the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man, to see Mobius inside, where he works a 48-hour week, with the exception of Sundays off, Matt?
The man is passionate about personal watercraft, the thinking man's dirt bike. He loves what he does. I guess he puts those hours in. And indeed, the interactions here from what am I settled in my notes in this portion of the story to call him at first Don slash Mobius and then later on Don Mobius, which was just my subconscious or my semi-conscious Dobius. Way of just what's that?
Dobius?
Well, all I know is I kind of like in retrospect, I kind of like. Again, in my notes, Don Mobius, that's the way to say it's the branch timeline Mobius. Okay, fine. But I also kind of like the idea of him being like, hi, I'm Don. Don Mobius. Welcome to the dealership. What can we do to get you in a personal watercraft today? Here's my card. It's donmobius@gmail.com. Like, I just feel like that's a story I want told too. Maybe that could be a what if ever is released.
Loki tells Don the TVA is gone, but he thinks he means ATV and there are two upstairs. Dale interrupts to tell him his son's on line 3. The single dad told him he'd call him back, but it's the other son. He'll call him back too. But Loki, time slips away again. A male hand grabs a copy of the Zartan contingent off a shelf in Pasadena, California in 1994 on a branch timeline. He brings it up to the counter where a female clerk doesn't think she's seen it before as AD Doug tells her it's really good and the author is one of the greats. She tries to scan it though and can't. He can give her cash, but she has to ring it up. She opens the back flap to see his picture and asks if he's buying his own book. As she does, a female manager recognizes AD Doug and repeats that she told him to stop putting his sci-fi book on their shelves, producing 4 more copies. He counters that science fiction is a well-respected and thought-provoking genre, but she says nobody there buys it.
It's such wonderful use of Ki-Hi Kwan here, you know, slightly sad sack, slightly sympathetic and so forth. Obviously also the meta notion here of the power of sci-fi and all of that. He goes back, we get the exterior shot of some sort of, I won't quite say bunker, but you know, like a warehouse type exterior, the interior of which clearly in my mind is a liberal reuse slash reworking of his Ouroboros' TVA workroom set. He boots up his computer, and this is when Loki pops in, ready to tell him something that's going to be hard to believe, but AD or OB, I guess I didn't settle on an ADOB name for my notes, but AD believes him. Indeed, it seems like one of his characters has come to life. It's very similar to the novel Sons of Urine, which, Pete, I'm slightly disappointed that at no point did anybody go for the joke for the fact that Sons of Urine, Y-O-R-E-N, sounds like U-R-I-N-E. Maybe that was lost in the edit or lost in the scripting phases, but a joke is right there. Sons of Urine.
Why do you want to poo-poo his most popular book with a PP?
Well, from PP to PhD, he's got one in physics. That's his day job. Loki has time traveled to a place of no time, that of the TVA. So traveling, ultimately he's been traveling to a place that does not exist. This does not sound like science, but does sound like fiction. You see, Pete, the episode is called Science / Fiction, and ADOB is a science fiction writer. It's the episode talking to itself.
AD tells Loki he needs to learn to control his time slipping, but he says he can't because it's random. AD says it isn't, since he keeps ending up around the people he's looking for, because he's not just slipping in time, but moving around in space, like a better version of one of those temp pads he was talking about. AD says with science, it's all what and how, but with fiction, it's why. AD asks why Loki needs to do this, and he says if he can't save it from being destroyed, there will be nothing to protect against what's coming. AD says that's the why. He should be able to control it, and encourages him to go ahead. Loki stands and spreads his arms, but nothing happens. Maybe he needs to try harder. Over a montage, he flails his arms and spins. AD tells him he must be doing something wrong, because it really feels like the time slipping is the answer. Loki says maybe they should focus on the science, pointing to a chalkboard, and AD does science to learn electrical pulses don't cause time slipping. Neither is it a fight or flight induced phenomenon, both of which he writes in his little handbook. Loki asks how science can help them get to a place that doesn't exist. And AD says maybe it does. Loki saw it disappear, but AD says he time traveled to the time theater. Maybe he just doesn't know where to look.
We get, Pete, the great metaphor here of the mug. Perhaps we need to get the gang back together. You see, Pete, all the pens in the mug can be all the people, all the friends that we've lost along the way. Get them together, be able to get back to the place by way of analyzing the collective aura of that time. Pete, this whole scene here, driven by the obvious two-hander of Tom Hiddleston and Ki-Hi Kwan, I wish that there was, like in the last year or so, I wish there was a space in the pop culture landscape where maybe Ki-Hi Kwan could have been similarly a supporting actor in a big Razzle Dazzle production, with another like famous guy being the lead. I would watch the heck out of that movie if you could have. I don't quite know what it is, but I think that the success in this scene here is proof that you can put Ki-Hi Kwan as a supporting actor, indeed an Oscar-winning supporting actor, in a scene. What I'm trying to say, Pete, is the Dial of Destiny should have had, you know, Ki-Hi Kwan in it, and maybe it would have done better. I don't know, but all of this time travel stuff is done in the shadow of lacking a tempad. Of course, making one would require a whole lifetime. But wait, Pete, Loki has in his jacket something. It's the TVA handbook, the bestseller of its day, kind of, sort of, since it's mandated to be on every desk. So that now handed over, we get Loki zipping away. Any thoughts, Pete, on the prior scene before we go back to suburbia?
Just the idea about getting the pens together here that's presented. The pens, the mug, all of that, to gather the band, as it were, where Loki slips into a neighborhood to watch Don bring the garbage cans back in front of his house, telling his kids there's a new rule that any toys left outside will be classified as trash, as he finds a burnt action figure dressed like a TVA Minuteman. He asks his son Kevin who gave him the matches. Of course, Kevin stole them. Don wants him to hand them over as his other son arrives. Kevin runs, and Don tells Sean to run after him. If he keeps him from burning down the house, Don will get him a puppy and a snake. They'll negotiate later. Loki reveals he's there, and Don recognizes him from the shop earlier. Loki apologizes for not sticking around before, as he was in a bit of a time crunch. Don has something he wants to show him and opens the garage to a pair of Sea-Doos. The wife's not coming back, and the boys are going to need braces, math tutors, and whatever else. So he's ready to part with them, but Loki reaffirms he's not there to buy a jet ski and tells Mobius that Mobius is his real name. And it gets a little tense before AD steps out of a time door with a temporary tempad.
Indeed, using the manual, he's built one in 18 or 19 months. There was a little downtime as his wife left him and he needed to move out. But ultimately, progress here for the story. Reality is not what Don Mobius thinks it is. Loki knows him from the Time Variance Authority. He knows that they are friends. Loki needs him because all of existence is in danger. You know, just in case you needed your central conflict kind of underlined, that's what's going on right now. And this is also when Don starts to come around to a bunch of things, including that name Mobius. It's a cool name. Wow.
Later identified as his space name, which makes it even better. But those 19 months of work there for AD at the cost of his job and marriage. But hey, he built the tempad. I particularly like the kind of twitchy effect on the time door that he's like moving it around like it's on a cursor or, you know, rails or something like that. Kudos to whoever came up with that effect. I know in the Marvel Assembled for the first season of Loki, you know, they spent a little bit of time talking about the time door effect. And yeah, it's just cool to see them kind of reverse engineer this here. But ultimately, this idea of them all becoming friends eventually and needing their help to save the TVA comes up. Don says he can't leave his boys, but Loki says he can come back anytime as he shows them meeting a couple minutes before outside Don's home. Loki tells Don he can bring him to any moment in time and his boys won't even know he's gone, but all of existence is in grave danger, including his boys. He needs his help, and he gets that cool name.
We get a little bit of a mini montage here. We go back to the hospital, Dr. B-15's hospital, where the time door opens and Loki approaches her. Ditto for the shores off of San Francisco Harbor. Pete, they made it, contrary to most evidence they made it. I should say most evidence. The assumption is that all three were swept away and drowned, but
because no one would ever be able to keep a secret, right? Like, even before social media, three escaped prisoners from Alcatraz who would have been the only ones ever wouldn't have been able to solemnly vow, hey, either you take this to your grave or we all get cooked or you died.
Pete, these two scenes here, Pete, they're not fishers of fish. They're fishers of time, you might say. All ending up in AD's workshop, the team coming together, the friends are friending it up. B-15 asks if this is everyone, but it is, of course, not. There's one more. We see Sylvie at her McDonald's. She's getting ready to leave for the day. Her food gets, Pete, what my notes say is dusted. I understand that it's actually more of the spaghettification here.
Yes.
It's an interesting place, you know, that this episode finds itself in that spaghettification also reminiscent of, you know, that famous thing that happened in one of the biggest movies of all time just a handful of years ago. But nonetheless, Loki steps in and she recognizes him. Loki didn't think that this would play out like this, nor did I. It's almost as though our top female lead is getting slightly juicier scenes than some of the wonderful but supporting actors that round out the cast.
Yeah, nobody else had recognized him after their lives reset when the loom melted down, but she remembers because she was there. He time slips in front of her, and she tells him to get in the car because she's going to buy him a drink. As a Zaniac video game announces it craves blood in a bar, more on that in a little bit, Loki explains no one else remembers who they are. Sylvie is glad they're back in their real lives. Loki said they should have a choice, and he can't help give them one without her. He calls her selfish, which she owns. She asks him what he really wants that ultimately he winds up blurting out when the bartender comes over, which is his friends back, so he is not alone. And Sylvie says they're both selfish. She knows it's hard, but everybody is back where they belong. Without them, Loki wonders where he belongs. She tells him they're all writing their own stories now and tells him to go write his.
Back at ADHQ, Casey is interested to learn if this thingy can take him anywhere or anywhen.
Like a park?
Maybe a park. Maybe
the Grand Canyon?
That's an option, too. Any other options you think that Casey, the Alcatraz, all options here. Indeed, I think it's setting up a purposeful moment of confusion in a little bit. But while that discussion is going on, Mobius is talking up Dr. B-15 about, wait for it, the joys of personal watercrafts. And don't forget, there's some really great financing options. With that, Loki returns. He is dejected. Mission not accomplished. You should all go home. It's not working. It is the moment of lowness for the narrative here. Back with Sylvie, she goes into a record shop, chatting it up with Lyle, the record man. He's got just the thing. It could be a fix or something to make it worse. She plays this rock album, all about
the Velvet Underground's album Loaded on Oh Sweet Nothing is the track.
There you go. The camera winding around her in yet another just wonderful camera move here out of our directors. But in the background, someone enters, then is gone. Lyle kind of barely noticing the man or hearing the ding of the ding of the door, then the man is gone. Lyle's pouring his coffee, but then the mug is gone. The coffee flowing, the spaghetti flowing, as much more of reality starts to do the same.
Coffee spaghetti. Yum.
He calls for Sylvie even as he disappears too. The room twisting and turning literally around the record. Dazzling visuals. Pete, something tells me that they gave enough time and money to finish this episode's VFX.
They did. So Marvel's back now, right?
Pete, we'll see next week. Maybe next week we'll be like, why is Kang out of focus? Oh, because that apparently happens a lot with the VFX when they're not done, which I'm still confused about. But Pete, all of this spaghetti creepiness creeping towards Sylvie, she seems to not be in that much of a hurry up. That's because, oh yeah, she has a temp pad of sorts on her wrist. Opens a time door and walks away from the increasing nothingness.
Don doesn't understand why Loki has changed his mind, but he says it was more about what he wanted, and reiterates that everybody should go back to their lives. Frank asks if he needs to go back to exactly where he was. And AD asks about the TVA, and Loki tells them they're all fine without it. But Sylvie enters to say they aren't. She says the branches are dying. Loki tells AD they have all the pens, but the temp pad is gone. And Frank didn't take it, and spaghettifies, followed by AD, who says it was a fiction problem after all. Don has to get back to his boys, but it gets him. And then Dr. B-15 Willis as well. With nowhere left to go, it happens to Sylvie. Loki hears past dialogue from seasons 1 and 2 and screams, taking him back first to before Sylvie spaghettified, and time slips back to when she arrived. He announces he controlled it. He says it's not about where, when, or why, but about who. He can rewrite the story and slips back to the TVA.
We get the credits. Credits that themselves are slowly starting to bend and branch ever so slightly, just to wonderful effect. And Pete, I was sure that there would be some sort of extra goodie. And then as soon as the Disney Plus screen kind of came back, which is to say it kind of goes, you might also like Ms. Marvel. I said, okay, I guess that's it. No secret scene. But I still fast forwarded, and when I get to, you know, Turkish dubbing and whatnot, I'm like, okay, there is no secret scene.
You're not a fan of Turkish dubbing? I love me some Turkish dubbing.
Pete, I always fast forward to just make sure that the Turkish dub crew is doing their work there to give them proper credit. But I didn't see anything, so I said, okay, episode over. And then I saw you on Twitter saying that there is something secret. I had to go back and look, nay, listen. What little true Easter egg, in a metaphorical sense, what Easter egg is there?
In only the second ever audio post-credit piece, the first being the clanging of the making of the Iron Man suit at the end of Avengers Endgame, for the first time we actually have dialogue. This, not necessary, but a nice little piece. It's Brad's Zaniac video game dialogue saying, "You died. Insert your coin, loser."
Hey!
Oh, wow.
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 Wow. Oh, man, I feel like wow.
Wow, let's blow some minds with some theories. Now, Pete, we have joked about this off mic, but I would like to start with a serious proposition here. With the recent reflection that the the grand overseer of the MCU. This is not the grand reveal, of course, but the notion of Kevin Feige as the one who's overseeing all of these stories, and he's famous for having these great fixes in the 11th hour, the metaphor, I think, in the Variety piece being that he knows how to bring the plane down and put out all the fires and get all the people off the plane, in a story sense. Here, Loki is at the end of the episode saying, I can rewrite the story even though we are 5 episodes through this season, even though we are 11 episodes through the 12-episode run, I guess, we'll find out if there's going to be more seasons after this and so forth. Is Kevin Feige and Loki, or rather, is Loki meant to be a representation of Kevin Feige, either through intent or subconsciously? Are we seeing, you know, Kevin Feige, the one that comes with the fixes at the 11th hour, now Loki will do it? Is Loki Kevin Feige?
Are you suggesting after they made the meta joke in She-Hulk about K-E-V-I-N, and having all the details, that now they're trying to go back and, respond, particularly after this Variety article, it's something that was shot months and months and months ago? Absolutely not.
Well, wait. I'm not saying it's in response to the Variety article in particular.
Of course it's not, because it hadn't been written, and, you know, they're not in the TVA.
That's what Kevin Feige wants you to believe.
Yeah, it does seem unsustainable that you're going to constantly find the pulse of the narrative in post-production. You write the thing, you make the thing. I'm not saying that things don't change, but you can't continually hope, I guess, is the verb here, that things are going to become clear as you're in the process. I mean, the horror stories about She-Hulk, about Daredevil, just seem, again, the phrase that comes to mind is unsustainable, that you're going to spend all of that money and then, oh my goodness, now we need to pivot. I mean, even the rumors, Matt, that Wonder Man, which was shooting, okay, but not yet formally announced, may spaghettify before our eyes.
Or add to it Blade, whose star Mahershala Ali was announced at either San Diego Comic-Con or D23 in 2019. Okay, fine, COVID delay and so forth. But they've now gone through multiple directors and 4 or 5 or 6 screenwriters. You saying that it is unsustainable, I will agree. I will just maybe change the verb tense. Some recent Marvel has shown it is not sustained. You know, it has not been sustained. But let me perhaps not double down. Let me 150% downify here. If you are creating, if you're the writer or the production team behind Loki, and you have time travel and you're in an environment where the saves come at the last minute, not in the narrative sense of, you know, and the plane's engines restart, towards the end of the dive, or, you know, does the Top Gun Maverick team get the missile in there? That's the last missile. Like, of course, that's narrative. That's how things work narratively. But within the real world productions, these saves come toward the end. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that maybe some of that DNA has rubbed off on the creation of this season. I'm sticking with my pet theory here that at least subconsciously, for at least some of the creators of this season, Loki is Kevin Feige.
I mean, listen, from the jump in this episode, we know where it's going. Fail-safe mode. You will not be allowed to fail. There's a safety net. It's the journey to discover who it was. This being Loki, the idea that he can now rewrite the story. I mean, the previous episode, We're Gods, okay? That re-realization, and now the flip of the script that the God of Mischief has to be the one to restore a sense of order.
Kind of the God of Mischief to the God of Responsibility, if you will.
Glorious purpose,
yeah.
Matt?
I mean, pardon me if I repeat some things from last week's theory segment, but I think heading into next week's episode, A, the notion of Loki and perhaps others, Loki Sylvie B-15, you know, whoever else you want to add to the leadership team, but the notion of Loki, comma, chairman of the board, comma, TVA, I think that is increasingly a possible outcome for next week's episode. I would add to it, if we pause the red alert status of where's Marvel at these days and just think, next week the Marvels comes out, which completes the vision of taking someone from one Disney Plus show, we'll see at the movies, taking somebody from a second Disney Plus show and saying, we'll see at the movies, and here's the movie lady as a post-credit scene. Whether the timeline, no pun intended, whether the real world production timeline has been impacted by a variety of things, VFX, strikes, etc., 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 you know, so be it. That adds to me to thinking that next week, in terms of Loki, let alone the Kang stuff, the Jonathan Majors stuff, then, you know, the possibility of Loki's now in charge of helping safeguard the timeline, and that could show up in a movie, in another TV show, and so forth, is going to continue to recur in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I feel like that now is increasingly a possibility for next week.
Well, come on, we've come 360 from Loki arriving at the TVA to wanting to take it over, to now realizing its worth and having to take it over. He will become the timekeeper.
It's a great potential outcome there. Also somewhat repeating myself from last week, but this notion of, you know, Jonathan Majors will appear in three episodes, and we were saying last week, does that mean that for episode 205 we do some sort of, you know, previously on the timeline, or you know, much as this episode kind of shook out, which would then be without Jonathan Majors, which would then mean He Who Remains / Timely / Kang for the finale. That all tracks as well. Pete, I won't qualify the red alert status regarding the Variety article and Jonathan Majors appearing in this, you know, season finale of Loki. So I won't qualify it. I will just say that article makes reference to Kang being a major player during and after this episode. And obviously we know there's the Kang as an Avengers baddie, at least currently. But the notion that we're leaving this episode with a major upswing in the Kang department as well, that's, I think, not only to be expected, but I think that article reiterated something that I don't think is a spoiler, which is, pending the real world, Kang is still coming.
Right, and I think the article oversells a quote from an unnamed executive, Matt. So somebody wouldn't put their name to it, okay? That, oh, they're effed on the Kang thing. Really? That a character who has all these variant versions couldn't be played by another performer? We all know that he could, okay? Beyond that they've recast people before because they can't come to contractual terms or somebody sours on something, okay? You floated the idea that maybe, I don't know, Mahershala Ali could take on the mantle of Kang. Boy, that wouldn't be them stepping in proverbial horse poop at all, right? That's not lucky that, wow, one thing didn't pan out and, oh, we have a guy who really wants to work in Marvel. You're not going to be a sword-wielding vampire. Instead, you're going to be the big baddie.
Certainly, there are story options. I think that the quote that you're referring to Marvel is effed with the way Loki season two ends and the Jonathan Majors situation. Maybe it's a bit horse blinders on, and you know, maybe when they or the article or we are saying Kang, it's more specifically Jonathan Majors. And you're absolutely right. In any film, let alone in a comic book film, you know, you can do the recast, you can do the but the ooze, the time rays, this is that. That's why I look different. So I think that there are story options there, you know, certainly Pete will know more on Mr. Major's legal status, one would anticipate between now and the end of the calendar year. But I think that, I mean, let me put it this way, Pete, narrative, if next week is the greatest, episodic finale for Marvel Studios television, while simultaneously being just this rapturous launching pad for the next phase of Jonathan Majors as Kang the Conqueror, and then the situation becomes, well, don't go back and really rewatch that, because that might be his last, you know, don't go back and rewatch that in 2024, because we're going in another direction, because some terrible choices were made and confirmed in a court of law. It's going to take the wind out of the sails of this a little bit. And, you know, literally since Thursday, I've been back and forth going, what is the, you know, art versus artist and this and that, the other. And this is a discussion I've been having in my head. And I think it's something that I'm going to be carrying into watching next week's episode, because I can't fully separate art and artist, particularly at this in-between phase where things still remain up in the air.
I don't know that we're going to get Jonathan Majors in this last episode. I think that the believed three-episode count counted for the two that we actually saw the actor and the other where we saw his likeness. It really doesn't impact this remaining narrative right now. The idea, though, that we need a reset button, okay, posited by Don trying to sell a jet ski. I think, again, we've got Chekhov's gun all over the place in this episode. What B-15 told the little girl, okay? Climb trees, don't climb trees. You need to do the thing and also not do the thing. It's kind of the Schrodinger's cat, if you will, for this series. I don't know that there'll be more of this. We did not see a season two coming. I don't know that we have a right to expect a season three. We know we'll see more Loki. Really, kind of everything on the show now has paid off, with the exception of finding out what Sylvie's Nexus event was and why they had to go and take her. We've answered everything. We've found out about Mobius' place on the timeline and jet skis and where everybody was from, B-15, having been a doctor, seeing herself, knowing her life. I think we're kind of there, and again, it feels like this full circle moment. So now they need to have the big piece where they save it all and really come to resolution.
I will predict, even though I'm going against spoiler Pete, I'm going out on the thin ice and I'm hearing it starting to pop. If during the production of Loki season one, which included, you know, the COVID shutdown pause and all of that, if during the course of the first season, that's when they started to figure out, you know what, maybe there is legs for a second season. Let's, you know, incorporate that when we restart post COVID shutdown, and then get that. I think that it wasn't just, hey, we're all home during COVID in sweatpants. What if there was more Loki? If I'm understanding the history properly, that was also an opportunity for kind of reflection at Marvel and Disney and Disney Plus to say maybe we go multiple seasons on things. Maybe the one and done movie feeder is not the way, the automatic way to go. So given as how this show was, you know, in the course of its first season being birthed, it had born as part of it the idea of additional seasons. And now there's even more interest, you know, publicly there's more interest in additional seasons. Yes, maybe we do get a full resolution at the end of this episode, aside from now Kang is everywhere. Now it's, you know, Kang volume turned up. I would hold out hope for Loki will return in season 3, even if we sit and go, but now it's all gone. Now it's all dispensed with, you know, whatever that might look like. Or Peter could be the obvious. Like I said, maybe it's the Disney board. I mean, the TVA board, you know, Loki's there, Sylvie's there, B-15, Mobius, Casey, like, you know, they're now the new TVA parliament. That would then, in my mind, make a real easy jumping off point for season 3, where the TVA parliament goes on further adventures.
That AD invents a tempad using the TVA handbook in this space that looks exactly like RNA, that's supposedly in Pasadena, California, but there's nobody around for miles, which is not the case. You have to wonder, does that location become the creation, the genesis for the TVA? You know, Loki now knowing how to rewrite the story. And clearly, again, you're a storyteller, so you have to come up with reasons. And, you know, what nobody's saying, we said who, we said why, we said what, we said when, but we never said how. So I think that being an important component to how the story goes on from here, that and some of the choices made of where we called people from the timeline. We talked about Alcatraz and, you know, our sentimental reflection of that, having podcast super early on, a show about Alcatraz that did not get renewed. But how about New York City 2012, given that Loki just came from there?
It does seem like a weird choice. And I think that you're kind of reflecting on, do we get more, I'll say, flashback type stuff, i.e., you know, AD in the workroom and Dr. B-15 and so forth. I'll return to another favorite tool of mine. If it's next Thursday at 9 o'clock and I click on that episode and it's, you know, 51 minutes long, I'm going to assume that we don't get a lot of more character backstory. It's going to be Loki and the team, frontward-facing story, dealing with the threat, going with the thing, Kang returns somehow, and so forth. You sit and say, ooh, it's 65 minutes long. Then we might get, you know, a 3-minute montage of AD in the workspace, bopping through time as he slowly builds the TVA together, and all of a sudden it gets shot into space, you know, whatever it is, we could get something that narratively is a little bit more episodic and unique. Now, that, of course, has not really been the flavor of Marvel Studios TV. It just really continues to be like, this is 1/6 of the movie, now expanded out a bit more, and there's more meat on them bones. So I don't know. I almost fear... This episode is so rich in character stuff, I almost fear that next week we're only going to get rubber hitting the road and the big fight and the resolution and so forth, and that we're not going to get, you know, but did Don get back to his boys or things like that? It might just fall by the wayside.
But all the little details that Don picks up an action figure that looks like a TVA Minuteman. It's got to be intentional, right? Like, just with the way that they can view themselves, the meta aspect of this, increasing the importance of all existence. I just think, and you know, we attach to our stories this heightened level of meaning and stakes. But when we get a Deus Ex Machina that is unbelievable, that comes in and salvages the story, that's where I hope it is truly convincing in terms of, oh, I can rewrite the story. That it's not just, well, I close my eyes and I wish really hard and I'm back in Kansas.
It's not Peter Pan on stage. If we all applaud enough, we can bring back Tinkerbell.
I mean, it better not be. Otherwise, you know, I love the full circle moment here that Frank, as they're ready to leave Alcatraz, says, if they're caught, they'll be gutted like fish. Remember when we met Casey, Loki tells him he'll gut him like a fish, and Casey doesn't know what a fish is.
This is definitely a better written series than some of other Marvel shows. I think the stink and shadow of Secret Invasion is still with me, perhaps. In this, what I think can be neutrally termed, in this time of Marvel reflection, I mean, I think we both are trying to articulate a certain fear that it's going to be like, oh, look, it's another Marvel end of Act 3 where it's a big CG battle where things fight things and maybe there's a skylight or laser and all those kind of tender character moments fall by the wayside because now it's the Kang Digital Army versus the army of 1,000 Lokis, and they're all going to fight in a big cloud, and some of them are going to ride, like, I don't know, space whales or something to help give scale to the small things. So I feel like there's this nervousness almost, despite the fact that this has been, I don't think this season has taken the twists and turns that the first season has, but this season has been very kind of grounded in the crazy world that it is, and very sincere with the characters, which is not always the case with Marvel stuff. So I think we're both saying, and I'm nervous they're going to mess it up, you know, at the end of the game on the 1 yard line.
What about this Zartan contingent, Matt? Are we going to get the Marvel G.I. Joe crossover?
Well, literally no, but I mean, maybe that's the source. Please let it not be a CG army versus a CG army. That would just be my plea to the universe, even though this was all filmed, you know, over a year ago, and probably the... I was going to say, all the work has probably been done. Pete, there's probably somebody laboring right now to finish the last 15 VFX shots for Thursday, and they're just... It's cold sweat and 20-hour work days and a whole lot of, like, Red Bull and takeout food as they work away. So, who knows, Pete? Though this was shot forever ago, the future still could be unwritten as we sit here right now. Maybe Kevin Feige / Loki is having Saturday afternoon, or it's almost late morning West Coast right now, to sit and have... Well, so what are some story options for the Loki season finale? Pitch me some ideas, guys.
Time to hear what you think.
Pete, we start with Twitter and the Twitter poll. How would people rate the episode? What predictions would they share in the comments? In terms of the poll... A rock, dud, 0%. Two pencils, rough draft, 5.9%. Three pens, what a story, 20.6%. Four quills, Shakespearean, 73.5%. Again, some replies here from Pumpkin Spice Has No Pumpkin. That's KCLYLE1 on Twitter. From the eerie music over the Marvel credits to the last moment, this episode was great. But aren't Loki and OB lying when they say they can drop the team back off whenever? If the TVA is saved, don't they go back there? Are they just saying that to save the TVA? Looks like Loki will have his chance to save everyone after all. What a surprise. Can't wait for the quote-unquote season finale. I'm not quite sure why season is in quotes. It is the end of the season, right? Or are they going to say Loki will return next week? Does Casey OILE1 know
there's
something?
There's no seventh episode.
Okay. We hear from Major Noel Gardner at Noel Camille. This was a great All the Answers episode. We finally see Mobius with the jet ski, but he was in 2022. Did his wife blip? The spaghettiing reminded me of the dusting. How will the season end? I think there will be a series of loop tries until they figure it out. Pete, that would be fun if we have a little Groundhog Day type thing here.
I love the idea that the wife blipped and that it would be misunderstood that she left, or really, like, all he says is not coming back. So this is a post Thanos pre return, pre blip situation. So yeah, she could come back, and maybe, Matt, those two jet skis go off into the horizon together.
Do we do some stunt casting with the wife?
Oh, I mean, come on. You know you could.
I mean, Pete, what if Owen Wilson was working in between season one and season two of Loki, if he was doing a Disney movie? What if his wife could be played by his co-star in The Haunted Mansion, recent star of her own show on Disney Plus, Rosario Dawson?
Wow.
Next tweet here from Steve Thurbridge, who says, excellent episode. If both Loki and Sylvie are gods, then what makes him so special? Has restarting the TVA been his glorious purpose all along? Once again, it feels like the last episode of a Disney Plus show needs to be 100 minutes long, or can we fit in season three before Kang War? Good question. We hear from David Siller at Siller David Poet. This season has been stellar, and this episode might be my favorite of the series. A lot to be done in the finale, and I'm certain some things will be left unresolved, but fine by me. I'll be down for season three. Spaghettification is eerie and beautiful. I love the way they evoke. And then, Pete, the tweet is cut off, and I don't think there's another tweet from him. So maybe he got spaghettified. Twist.
It's possible.
It's an evocative look to it. Penultimately, we hear from Jacob Daniel Johnson, the original JDJ on Twitter. Fantastic episode. Loved the very eerie cold open. The spaghettification effect is so unsettling. Nice to see the backstories of the TVA agents. Makes me wonder if Loki is the one that will take them out of their timelines to be in the TVA. This show loves its time loops. That's not bad at all. That's really good. That's really good. Last tweet, Pete, comes from Jordan at The Mighty Jor. Amazing episode. OP Loki is so cool. It's like you're a better version of one of those tempads. Amazing. I hope he keeps the ability. I can rewrite the story. Hype for next week and beyond. Now I just need, says Jordan, Loki to change into an Asgardian outfit next week for Loki and Thor to reunite soon. All possibilities, I suppose. Pete, what do you have over there on Facebook and Blue Sky?
On Facebook, Matt, I ran a poll after that Variety piece. I asked, is Marvel in trouble? And your choices were yes, no, and I am Groot. And with 35 votes to this point, the slim victor is no, followed by, so that's 14 votes for no, 13 votes for I am Groot, and just 8 votes for yes, Marvel is in trouble. There's one comment that reflects towards Loki, so that's the only one I'm going to read at this point. Farrell Nicholson replied, this week's Loki feels like Marvel's back.
Ooh, certainly confidence there. Again, for being a penultimate episode, it was very, very good.
Yes. To Blue Sky, Matt, we go, where Jack NYC writes in, Loki, season 2, episode 5, was not good from a story perspective. Just give Loki more power than Thanos and call it a day? I did like the payoff for ATV Mobius and the sentimental moments. Also liked the spaghetti effect when a branch timeline dies. Reminds me of The Last of Us on HBO.
Pete, as we get ready for the season finale, series finale, Loki character finale, universe finale, Kang finale, all of this made possible by those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, where Pete, right now, open to all, patrons and not, there is that poll with Echo dropping all at once. How should we podcast the show? Votes have already come in, so head on there, one and all. We'd love to get your input.
Yes, tell us how you would prefer to listen to Fantastic Geek as you are watching all of the episodes of Echo. But yeah, when it comes to patreon.com, go there for this vote. Maybe check out some of the other things. It takes just $1 a month to contribute to get you at all of the things that we do on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Can't contribute right now, however. You can go to Apple Podcasts. You can help us out by giving us a rating or a review to any of our 34, soon to be 35 with Echo podcast feeds.
And Pete, let's keep the Marvel Cinematic Universe conversation going, what with next week being a Loki series finale and a big return to the movies. How can people be in touch with you on various social media outlets?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Threads. You can find me on Blue Sky at Peter, PieterJKelaar, 12,600. No, followers, can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, and Threads, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. Pete, want to mention, ran my first Threads poll ahead of tomorrow's Star Trek Lower Decks episode. So dipping our toe in, you know, preparing for the eventual branch collapse of Twitter and and so forth. Either way, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, for this episode, the final word.
That doesn't seem very scientific.